Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
The reality is they need to eat. And that's our philosophy across all of our programs, even in our dining room for our evening meal. If you need the food, we're not going to question why you need the food.
Vicki Pierce of the Community Kitchen of Monroe County. When school's out for summer, her organization drives around the county delivering healthy bagged lunches to kids in low-income neighborhoods. We ride along on today's show. Blossoms on the Queen of the Night orchid cactus are fleeting. Harvest Public Media waited and waited to bring us this story. Then, get excited about spaghetti squash with Chef Daniel Orr. And dogs can protect farm animals, but they can also cause a lot of mayhem in farm country. Cale Wilk's story later on today. Taking a look at recent food and ag news, here's Mark Chilla.
Leaders in the U.S. House and Senate Agriculture Committees were granted a request for more time for public comment on a rule that would more clearly define the meaning of certified organic meat. The rule was proposed in April to nail down standards for how organic farmers handle animals before and during slaughter. Under the current draft of the rules, barns, coops, and other shelters must be big enough for the animals to lie down, stand up, and stretch their limbs without being crowded by other animals. Livestock would also have to get constant outdoor access. Sick animals must be treated or euthanized. Some lawmakers are concerned the new rule could make organic food more costly and increase the risk of disease and contamination. Comments are now due by July 13th. It seems Roundup's time is up, at least in the European Union. An EU proposal to extend the sale of glyphosate, the active ingredient in the Monsanto herbicide, already failed earlier this year. So EU executives offered a 12 to 18-month extension to allow time for further study of the chemical. That proposed extension failed this week. If the EU does halt glyphosate sales, Monsanto could see a $100 million loss in earnings as premium-branded Roundup is diverted to the general market. The EU's license to sell glyphosate expires at the end of this month, when a six-month phase-out of the product is scheduled to begin. The path to normalize relations between the United States and Cuba made a stop in farm country last week. Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer reports.
U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack and his Cuban counterpart, Gustavo Rodriguez Rollero, toured a central Iowa corn and soybean farm and talked about water, soil, and energy. Vilsack, with an interpreter behind him, said he hopes Cuba can increasingly be an export market for farm products like soybeans, rice, and poultry.
There is a tremendous opportunity for us to have a solid relationship between our two countries, beginning with agriculture.
The trip also follows a signed agreement between the two nations to work together on a list of agricultural issues, including seed science and plant and animal health. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
And overloaded bins and falling grain prices are pulling U.S. wheat farmers further into the global grain glut. This year's inventories are already up 30% from last year and are expected to get even larger. That means farmers will not only lose money, but they also may not have a place to store their surplus crops. So where does all that extra grain go? Some growers may dump grain in parking lots or vacant buildings. These are called grain piles, and they're not unusual. But without a floor, walls, and covering, the grain risks exposure to pests and moisture, meaning an extra 40 or 50 million bushels will not find a home. For many growers, the slump means they are spending more to grow wheat than they can collect when the grain is sold. These stories were written by Chad Bouchard and Taylor Killow. You can read them at eartheats.org.
Find more news from Earth Eats and beyond on Twitter at Earth Eats. Great. Thanks, Mark.
My pleasure.
It's summer, and flowers are blooming here in the Midwest. More than just a pretty time of year, bloom season is the elaborate mating dance plants do to draw pollinators close. Blossoms can last weeks, but for some species, the ritual takes place over the course of just a few hours. From Harvest Public Media's archives, Abby Wendell has more.
Tonight is bloom night. Linda Zellmer perches on a stool, gazing at the swollen bud of an orchid cactus.
I wish it would move a little faster. But it's slowly opening.
Zellmer is a librarian at Western Illinois University. In addition to shelving lots of books, her library houses thousands of potted plants, including a 100-year-old jade specimen and a 15-foot-tall fig tree. But the most alluring plants the library houses are three orchid cacti, known to botanists as Epiphyllum oxypetalum. Admirers nickname it Queen of the Night, or Lady of the Night, because it blooms in the dark, and each bud opens just one night a year.
When it opens up, you can smell it, like this whole area will smell like this flower. You know, sometimes it gets to the point that it's really overpowering.
This particular Lady of the Night lives a solitary life, rooted in a small pot under the shadow of an umbrella tree. But tonight is its one chance to do what it was meant to do, spread its seeds. A few weeks ago, the cactus pushed out a single bright green bud that hung down from its fleshy stem. Zellmer photographed as it extended 4 inches long. Then, she says, it stood up, eager for birds and bugs to swoop in and collect some of its pollen.
The stem that the flower is on literally hooks up like a shepherd's hook. And right now the flower is so heavy that it's just laying on the floor.
In its native habitat, stretching from the subtropics of Mexico to the rainforests of South America, the orchid cactus would never touch the ground. Instead, it clings to the branch of a tree 40 to 60 feet up. It can grow 20 feet tall, wrapping its roots around the tree's trunk and feeding on sunlight, rain, and air. Perched in the rainforest canopy, the flower blooms bathed in moonlight amidst the whirl and buzz of nighttime creature life. The library is silent.
It's just relaxing. It's quiet in here at night.
It's approaching 10 o'clock, and finally, it starts to happen. First, the bud's outermost petals peel back, wiry and pink. Then the middle layers fringe and part, long and thin like a piano player's hand.
It opened up a little bit more.
You can smell it now, too.
Soon, the flower's central blossom balloons and its wide opal petals start to unravel. By full bloom, they'll stretch to the size of a dinner plate, revealing a beaming white, almost iridescent center.
It looks like a little spider in the middle, but it's this pure white, and it smells wonderful.
At this point, the blossom is literally throwing off heat. Its warmth, a siren's call to the forest's hummingbirds, bats, and moths. Come, I'm ready, you can imagine it scream. If the orchid is lucky, one of these creatures will be covered in pollen from another orchid cactus. As the creature dips into the petals for a drink, the pollen will brush off and trickle into the flower's center, fertilizing the tapioca-like embryos inside. Then, the plant can bear forth a big red fruit, filled with orchid cactus seeds.
Ours have never produced fruit because they never get pollinated. In the wild, they do produce some sort of fruit.
A little before midnight, Zellmer packs up and heads off. By the time she returns tomorrow morning, the blossom will be spent, and the cactus will look like just another plant in the library. That is, until next year. Abby Wendell, Harvest Public Media.
See a photo of the flower and listen to this story again at harvestpublicmedia.org. Thank you. It's 7:30 in the morning, and the community kitchen of Monroe County is already bustling with activity. Heather James and four volunteers are packing paper bags for the kitchen's summer breakfast program. By 9, two vans will leave the kitchen to deliver these meals to kids in low-income neighborhoods around the area. James and her crew are right on schedule.
Okay. You guys can put the oranges in there while I do the bologna sandwiches.
They pack lunches, too. Today, it's 80 bags with bologna sandwiches, milk, juice, and an orange.
Yesterday, they actually had peanut butter white chocolate scones. Yeah, which were amazing.
Vicki Pierce is the executive director of the Community Kitchen of Monroe County. Those scones, by the way, were made in-house, and they do that a couple times a week as a special treat for the kids. Pierce says they looked at the numbers of kids receiving free or reduced lunches during the school year to determine which neighborhoods to put on their summer delivery route. In total, 9 neighborhoods in both Bloomington and Ellettsville, where they serve about 100 kids.
Oh, you know what? We're not ready. We don't have Boys and Girls Club food.
It's our first stop.
Ben Myers is driving the van they call the ice cream truck. He parks it in a central location, like a playground, and the kids can just run up to the van, grab some food, and go. It's a bit more complicated than that at certain locations, but we'll get to that in a second.
We're going up to the Crestmont Boys and Girls Club to drop off their breakfasts and lunches. Do you want the radio off while we're doing this? Okay.
Because it's challenging to express what it's like for a lot of these kids to go out firsthand and experience it. It's eye-opening.
That's Tim Clower, assistant director of the kitchen. He's the one who makes connections with the mobile home directors and apartment managers to get permission to do the deliveries. He also worked with schools to get flyers into kids' hands before the school year ended. They serve anyone under 18, but the majority of the kids who take advantage of the free food are under 12.
I got a big one.
Okay. I got one more.
I want to. I'll take it.
We'll go see if they have any empties for us to take back.
Yep, they have some, I think. Yep.
About 37% of students in Monroe County received free or reduced lunches this past school year, according to the Indiana Youth Institute. That translates to about 5,200 kids. Pierce says some of these kids are eating breakfast and lunch at school.
And so that means in the summer when they're at home, two things are happening. They are potentially at a nutritional disadvantage because they're not getting those two meals a day at school that are well-balanced and meeting their needs. And in addition, their family's food budgets are going to be stretched so much more tightly than they are during the school year.
Whoa, we got kids already. Hey, guys. How's it going? Here, do you want to hand out meals? And I'll mark them down on the sheet.
We're now at Lindsay Hayes Trailer Court in Ellettsville, Indiana. Three kids are waiting for the van to pull over. Myers gets out a wicker picnic blanket and sets it down on a patch of overgrown grass and gravel. Some kids take their breakfast to go. Three kids stick around.
We're hanging out. Raisin bran. Juice. Apple juice. And white milk. This is all we have.
We stay at each site for 15 minutes, then it's on to the next. The kitchen paid for this program out of its own budget for years. They now receive funding from the Summer Food Service Program of the Indiana Department of Education. With that funding comes some hoops to jump through.
We'll need to keep track of how many kids eat here with us, as well as how many kids we hand a meal to and just take them home.
Myers is making tally marks on a clipboard. The funding is intended to support congregate meals where everyone comes to one location and workers make sure the kids are the ones eating the food. At this stop, Highland Park Elementary, everyone needs to sit on the blanket and eat the food while we're here.
Who wants to be on the radio?
Kids, why did we come to the breakfast truck?
To have breakfast.
Chanel Earl has been bringing her three kids to this delivery spot for 4 summers. They're 2, 4, and 6 years old.
This is like brunch.
It is. It's late enough in the day that they already had a small breakfast this morning. Here's your milk.
2 of Earl's kids eat meals provided by their schools, so the summer months are tough on her budget.
I mean, if you think about 3 kids, 5 breakfasts a week, that adds up to a lot of money really fast. And we can handle it. We would feed our kids if this wasn't here. They wouldn't go hungry.
At first, she thought her family didn't qualify for this program because, as she put it, they aren't starving. But Pierce says no one has to prove their need to be welcomed into the community kitchen.
Because the reality is they need to eat. And that's our philosophy across all of our programs, even in our dining room for our evening meal. If you need the food, we're not going to question why you need the food.
What's most important, she says, is removing barriers.
Bye. Just slide it back that way. Perfect.
I'll reach ya.
Thanks to Ben Myers, Tim Clower, Vicki Pierce, and everyone at the Community Kitchen of Monroe County. Listen to this story again at eartheats.org. Coming up, lessons in cooking spaghetti squash with Chef Daniel Orr. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, now with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. You're with Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.
Ready to do it? All right. What we're going to do today is gluten-free spaghetti.
Thanks, Chef. We're out of here.
We're going to do a spaghetti squash dish. Actually, two different dishes. One is a salad and one is going to be a traditional kind of marinara kind of preparation. But the main thing I want to teach everyone is how to cook spaghetti squash. Many people have overcooked it on their first attempt and it comes out mushy and just tastes like squash. So the key is to keep it nice and stringy and have a little bit of a crunch to it, a toothsome al dente texture. So I'm going to show you how you can make this a weekday meal, super, super easy. I've got the whole spaghetti squash. I'm going to cut it horizontally from stem to end. Okay, and that's the hardest part about preparing the dish. All right, so we're going to take that. We're going to put it on a microwave plate. Just a little bit of water on there. We're going to cover it with a piece of plastic wrap. And it's going to go into the microwave for 5 minutes. After 5 minutes is a nice al dente cooked spaghetti squash. And you can see I can take my fingers and kind of separate the strands of spaghetti. Okay, and we still have the seeds in there. But now that it's cooked, I don't need to have a spoon or, you know, scrape it out or anything. Just as simple as pulling out those seeds. Okay, if you want to, and I have to do this every time I cook this for my mother, pull out all these seeds and toast them off and make a little happy hour bar snack out of the seeds. So you can just toast them with some powdered garlic and a little bit of salt and cayenne pepper, a little bit of olive oil, and that makes a great bar snack.
He's made pumpkin seed recipes for us before. They're posted at eartheats.org. Two really simple preparations for our cooked spaghetti squash. After this story, which goes out to all you pet owners out there, think about Fido and Fluffy around mealtime. You fill their bowl with food, they wait obediently for your command, and then boom, the kibble is gone before you know it. But when domesticated animals find themselves roaming free in the country, no regular meals on their agenda, that's when things get complicated for farmers and their livestock. Cale Wilk with the story.
That's Paris the cat. She lives at Lazy Cat Gardens with her owner, Gloria Jocks. I love having cats. I mean, cats are so soothing. They, all they ever give you is unconditional love. I mean, they just love you. I mean, they'll get in my lap and he'll love me and get on my shoulder and just purr and fall asleep. I mean, you know, what more is there in life?
Along with Pug, Ivory, and Sundance, Paris is one of four at Lazy Cat Gardens these days. Gloria didn't expect these cats. They just sort of showed up. She believes each of them were dumped somewhere by her property west of Bloomington. Abandoned animals are a common occurrence out in the country. Gloria sometimes hears cars stopping on the road, the door opening, and then the car driving off. She thinks this is the smoking gun.
That means that someone's gotten tired of it and just opens up the car door and out comes the cat and they drive off and then hoping somebody else will take care of it. I don't know why people want to just drop off animals in the country. I just don't understand it.
Gloria sees at least two or three stray cats and dogs a month. But she and her neighbors already have taken some in and they can't support any more. So usually she takes the animals to the Humane Society.
So it's sad when people just drop their animals off thinking that they're going to live out here. And a lot of them get taken out by coyotes, and a lot of them also get hit by cars.
Sometimes the ones that make it can start causing problems for farmers.
And then we had cats earlier this year that were just feral cats that come in, and they were, you know, getting some of the chickens. So, but we've had numerous other situations where we've captured, you know, dogs and had to take them down to the dog pound of the Humane Society because they didn't have tags and they were just wandering out here.
Larry Howard is the owner of Maple Valley Farm in Ellettsville. He's had trouble with not only stray pets, but also domesticated ones. Larry says packs of dogs have attacked his sheep and a llama.
I think if you talk to most people, they don't really think their pet dog that they keep around the house in the yard, they may let wander. They don't really think that it would do something like that.
Larry raises everything from pigs to sheep to geese. His experiences motivated him to change the way he raises his animals. He's implemented an integrated grazing system where the animals move to different areas of the property each day and graze as a mob. He even got Pyrenees dogs for guarding the animals. To top it off, he surrounds the animals with electrified fence. He's not taking any chances with his livelihood.
Yeah, it could potentially be devastating if you have people letting a dog or two out or something and they pack up with another dog. It can really cost a lot of money.
When Larry or Gloria call the authorities about a loose animal, they deal with someone like Amber Zeich.
And right now I'm riding in my vehicle with a dog I just picked up, and she's being very friendly.
She is an officer in animal management with the Monroe County Sheriff's Department.
I would say more often we get calls from big-time farmers on larger livestock, like cattle being chased by dogs, or I did a call where some dogs got into a pig pen and killed a couple pigs. Things like that are more common with farmers around here.
Monroe County pet ordinances say owners shall not allow dogs to go beyond their property without restraint, unless they accompany their owner on a hunt. Cats, on the other hand, can go beyond their property, as long as they're neutered and wearing a collar, or marked as feral with tipped ears. But in both cases, neither is allowed to be a public nuisance.
More often, we find a problem with just people not obeying the law. A lot of people have an attitude of, I live in the country, so I don't have to put my dog on a leash, or I have 50 acres, so my dog's not going to leave that. Well, if you let your dog loose on your property without ever correcting it, it's very likely that it will leave eventually.
Come on, boys. Come on, Paris. Let's go. Come on.
On Gloria's farm, the cats join her daily routine, from her early morning walk to her gardening. At night, the cats live in the lap of luxury. Gloria and her husband converted a one-car garage into a structure with beds, kitty jungle gyms, and toys. Or as Gloria calls it, the bunkhouse. Remember Paris? That's what she sounds like getting petted by Gloria. Although some of the pets out there have the potential to kill, the felines at Lazy Cat Gardens certainly don't.
They're the most lazy cats you've ever seen. They do not know how to kill anything except Sundance. When they get together and they get a mouse, the four of them, they do like a square and they just bat it back and forth. They won't kill it. I mean, they just think it's a toy. So that ain't lazy. What isn't?
For Earth Eats, I'm Cale Wilk.
Cale was a student at Indiana University when he produced that story for Earth Eats. See photos he snapped of both Gloria and Larry on our website. In the kitchen for two really quick and easy ways to serve spaghetti squash. Daniel has pulled it out of the microwave and he's pulling the squash out of the shell.
All right, so I've got a bowl and I'm just going to take the fork and round it from the cut edge to the center of the spaghetti squash. Turn it over, do the same thing on the other side. And you can see how those are nice strands of spaghetti. So for that first application, we've just taken our favorite tomato sauce and we're putting the warm spaghetti squash in the center. Top that with some grated cheese. And I'm going to, we get these micro sprouts from Southern Indiana Microgreens. And I'm going to use some of the garlic chive sprouts. And then I'm going to just put a little bit of our favorite green herb oil around the outside. And there you go. You have a real simple, beautiful Italian-style spaghetti squash with marinara. And for the rest of it, I'm going to make it into a salad. So we're going to go to our old standbys. Olive oil, salt, pepper, our classic vegetable vinaigrette, lemon juice. Keep it simple. Let the ingredients speak for themselves. You don't need to muddy things up with 25 ingredients. To that, we're going to garnish it with some pumpkin seeds. So that's going to give us our crunch. Okay, again, we're going to use our sprouts from our friends over at Southern Indiana Micro Sprouts. And there we got it. Another way to use spaghetti squash for the uninitiated.
When you look at the picture, you'll see those beautiful purple kohlrabi sprouts. Very pretty. It seems sort of silly to include recipes for such simple preparations, but we've done it anyway. Like Daniel always says, feel free to veer off course and make these dishes your own. EarthEats.org is our website. Daniel Orr always comes through with great recipes for our program, thanks to him and his staff at Farm Bloomington Restaurant. Thanks also to Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, and everyone at Harvest Public Media. Our executive producer at WFIU is John Bailey. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, now with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. It's been good today. Thanks for listening. I'm Annie Corrigan.